Welcome to the Briefing Room, a Healthcare Communications Association initiative brought to you by the Foresight Committee. I'm Jo Spadaccino, co-founder of STIRD, and I'm co-leading the Briefing Room series with Rhiannon Meaden, Global Head of Complete Health Vision, a McCann Health medical communications company, and my colleague on the Foresight Committee. The HCA Foresight Committee explores topics that have relevance not only for today, but also help us as a profession prepare for tomorrow. In our briefing room, we're talking to prominent senior business leaders at the forefront of change in a wide variety of roles in the pharmaceutical sector to help us build a timely picture of what the key areas of focus are looking forward, and importantly, what the future asks will be for us as healthcare communicators. Today, we have a break from the norm, as I have the pleasure of interviewing not one, but two guests, Christina Challet and Stephen Head from Astellas. Can I please ask you now to both introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your respective roles?
Hi, thank you so much, Jo, for the opportunity. Yes, Jo introduced me as Christina Challet, but please just refer to me as Tina. My role at Astellas actually is quite a new one to the company. We recently realigned and rebranded what was formerly known as our CSR department to sustainability. And that's very much in line with what a lot of people will refer to as ESG, looking at very much the principles of environment, social, and governance. And my role focuses on the first of those three, which is the environment pillar. So I look after the global proposition of environment sustainability at Astellas.
And I'm Stephen Head. I joined Astellas about 3 years ago now, and I work in the patient partnerships team. That's part of the patient centricity division, which was set up exactly 3 years ago. And really my role and the scope of what I do is to look at how do we bring the patient voice into the organisation? How do we make sure that we're listening to ultimately the people that are, I'd say, the end users of what we're making and what we're producing? So how do we do that all the way from that discovery phase, so really early on when we're looking at trying to bring through a new medicine or a new innovation, all the way through to delivering it and making sure it gets to the people who need it? So along that continuum, we look at how we can bring the patient voice in.
Brilliant. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you both. I'm really excited to hear from you. I think, you know, as your intro showed, that, you know, if you went back even just a few years, I guess your roles may not have even existed in all but the most forward-thinking organisations. So the fact you're here is a sign in itself of how much the industry has been evolving. I know you're going to offer us a fascinating window into the progress achieved so far, and of course, what's still ahead of us. And I'm delighted to be hosting our first interview pairing too. So I'm going to dive right in with a broad question about the sector as a whole. And it would be lovely to hear from you both on this one. So my question is, as we look forward, what do you believe will be, say, the top three developments or influential trends impacting our sector? And maybe think about that in the short term, so maybe the next 12 months, but also looking even further ahead to the five-year horizon. I don't know who wants to kick us off there.
Maybe I'll go first, Joel. So I think for me, there's a couple of things that come out. As soon as you said that, I was thinking about two things that come to mind, particularly in the areas that we're working in. So certainly we've got a large focus in oncology. And what we're seeing more and more is this whole concept around personalised medicines, how we're trying to look at trying to get the best result for individual patients based on maybe it's their genetic profile and their genetic makeup, or whether it's based on a particular marker that they may have that might show that a medicine is more likely to work or have a greater effect in that person. So for me, that whole concept around personalising what we're doing is something that we'll see more and more and more. It's already here, we're doing it, but I certainly think in the next 5 years, where we are in 5 years' time will be different to where we are now. So that's the first thing. The other thing, again, that comes to mind is we know that when we produce a medicine and we do our clinical trials and we get the results on those trials, there will be further or new knowledge which will come out after the approval. So when we see the medicine going into the real world environment, that's when we maybe start to see its true impact and true effects and how it's working. And with that kind of real world evidence, that information that we're gathering, it takes time to get analysed, and then we take it to regulatory bodies and reviewers and things. And actually, I think what we'll start to see is that real world evidence, that data generation coming through much quicker, but also getting incorporated into label applications far quicker. So hopefully we'll start to see that coming through. So those are kind of two trends, and saying, actually, we know this medicine works, but actually we're getting more data about it. So let's make sure that we can put that into our labels and our label applications.
Fantastic. Tina, anything you'd like to add on top of that?
I would completely agree with what Stephen has said. The only thing I would add is that thinking about what Stephen said also, I think both of those propositions play into what I see as the realms of diversity and inclusion. So looking at diverse populations, whether it's talking about real world evidence or personalized medicines, and also being inclusive in our approach, in particular when it comes to things like clinical trials, supporting our medicines right from development, even prior to that at proof of concept stage, right through delivery to the marketplace, making sure that we're always cognizant of how diverse our populations are and how diverse our patients are. So I think thinking along those lines would really build on our enterprise value as a company and speaks very much to our ESG pillars. So I think diversity is something that's very material to Astellas. And looking, at that spectrum in particular and everything that it encompasses, I think that would be the third leg of the real world evidence and personalized medicines scenario that Stephen has just put forward that I would add. Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, some really, really chunky areas of development, which have really rapidly accelerated in the last couple of years, haven't they? But yeah, I think looking forward, we'll only continue. Great stuff. Thank you. I wanted to draw on one of those aspects a little bit more. So, Stephen, you mentioned the phrase actually in your intro, but anyone working in the industry will be familiar with the phrase patient centricity, and you're more well placed than many to comment here. So, in your view, are we now well set up as an industry to be truly patient centric? How are we doing?
I definitely think we're set up to do it. It doesn't mean we're doing it, if that makes sense. So I definitely think the framework's there, the knowledge there, the desire to want to do it is there. So again, I always kind of believe in trying to look at things in kind of time blocks. So if you look at 5 years ago, a lot of companies spoke about it, but weren't necessarily doing it. Whereas if you look at now, absolutely, more companies are doing it, more companies recognise the value of it, more companies are putting in place specific teams to be able to do this, to look at bringing the patient voice in, just like we're doing at Astellas. So as I say, that whole concept of kind of discovery to delivery. So I definitely think the framework's there, not only in industry, but outside of industry. If you look at regulatory bodies, if you look at societies, if you look at movements like PFMD, so patient focused medicines development, these things are all set up now in a way which is kind of challenging the status quo. We must do this. Years ago, if you were bringing patients and patient groups into the work that you were doing, there was a suspicion around why you were doing it. Whereas now, I think it's the opposite. If you're not doing it, people should be asking questions as to why. Because ultimately, medicines are developed for patients. We need patients' voices in that development process to really help us deliver the best possible solution for them. So that's why, as I say, I definitely think we're set up to do it. I think the compliance and legal frameworks are always there to make sure that the patient and the patient group are protected, as the industry. So I think definitely the framework's there. We just need to look at how we make it happen, but how we do it, not as a kind of one-off transactional concept, but we do it continuously. We do it throughout the whole process. So absolutely, it's there.
Great. Anything you'd like to add to that one, Tina, or shall I move on to the next question?
Yeah, I mean, in the realms of where I work in sustainability, I think a sustainable business is really key for the future, but that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people, and also in particular, in regard to what industry you work in. So for us, for example, at Astellas, you know, sustainability can mean a lot of things, from how we operate as a business, you know, to how we bring our products to market and ensure they reach the right patients at the right time. And it also can mean how do we look towards the future in terms of meeting our commitments from a societal perspective, in terms of carbon neutrality and our carbon footprint. And then that also lends itself nicely to this concept of what in ESG terms is noted as double materiality. So our financial impact, but also our societal impact. And they will be really important measures that we will be required to disclose in the future. So those companies, I think, that are investing now in order to have a truly greener future will be the ones, I believe, that will survive, not just from, you know, sales and marketing perspectives, but also being the choice of consumers in the future going forward, because we will be valued and perceived according to our ESG targets and how we meet them and go about, excelling in those areas, really. So none of us, I think, are under any illusion of the future challenges, but those companies that will survive are the ones that will step up to the mark and meet those challenges head on. And more we have organizations such as the IFPMA and FPIA that are also aligned to ESG metrics and measurements, and supporting us as individual companies, as their members, to make sure that we are fit for the future and that we are be able to meet, we will be able to meet the requirements going forward.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that. Really powerful summary. There's huge responsibility, isn't there? But really encouraging to hear that. And for both of you, perhaps in your respective roles, can you make maybe a few comments on what meaningful differences your organisation, Astellas, is making in these areas? And also, what commitments do you look for from those you collaborate with? Because, you know, as you both have alluded to, you know, partnerships is really key to success here as well, isn't it?
Sure. Gina, do you want me to go, or are you happy
yeah,
to?
Go ahead.
So what values do we look for in partners? Look, the stakeholders that we're engaging with are patients and patient groups, so we need to make sure that their independence is maintained at all time, that we value their input, we value their expertise, that we really understand what they're bringing to us is something that we will never understand. We've got amazing scientists at Astellas. What we're trying to do is to bring the experience of the lived experience of the patient to those scientists, so that they can develop the best molecule, the best medicine, whatever, in whatever way they can. So for me, it's about maintaining and respecting their independence. But for me, it's also about being authentic with them. We have to be realistic as well in what we can do and what we can't do. We have to manage their expectations as well as them managing our expectations. So for me, and it's interesting because yesterday I was at a conference. Bizarrely, Tina, ESG and corporate reputation came up really highly. It's all around communications, but also so did transparency. So for me, transparency is one of the biggest things that we can have, and one of the biggest things that we can use as an opportunity to be clear and set expectations for each partner. So for the patient groups and the patients that we work with, we want to be as transparent as possible up front. Talk about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and how their lived experience, their knowledge can really help impact and bring along better solutions for other people.
Yeah, and certainly agree with all of that. Again, my esteemed colleague there, Stephen, setting the bar very high. But I would only add to that Astellas is a very forward-looking company, and what we try to focus in on is that whole premise of changing tomorrow. And that everything that we do has to be about focusing on and about changing tomorrow for the better, for us as a company, but also for all of our patient populations and our stakeholders in particular. And I think part of that, a big part of that for me, is about ensuring that innovation is shared equally within the patient population. And I think in the future, how we ensure that equality, again, leaning in on my DE&I aspects that we covered earlier, I think is going to be really important in setting companies apart to ensure that there is equality and equity in terms of what we bring to the market, how we bring to the how we bring it to the market, and ensuring that innovation is shared, you know, as far as possible and accessed in as many different ways as possible by all the stakeholders and patients that we choose and try to serve.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Thank you. That's given us a really good grounding of some of the kind of aspects of our world that we'll be focusing on in future. I wanted to turn now to talk about healthcare communications as a particular function. You'll be aware that the audience for this particular webinar is those working in healthcare communications. And in particular, I want to talk about the value that it can offer, you know, to really address some of the topics that we've already touched on. So quite a general question for you both, but what does great healthcare communications look like to you?
Oh, I'll start maybe this time round then. I think great communications is about, it's about something that, you know, does what it says on the tin. It lands well with the audience that it's intended for. It's tailored to meet that audience's knowledge and understanding of a situation. And it's geared towards changing behaviours in a lasting way as well. So it transforms more than just the audience that receives it, but also the environment that it's delivering the message within, almost. So those behavioural changes should be memorable and lasting as well. So I think for me, that would be the crux of what I would say is real saliency in terms of healthcare communications.
Yeah, maybe I'll just add to that by saying, I think, again, for me, it's something that's simple, that's kind of easy to understand. It's not complex. It has to be easy. It has to deliver a message. It has to have, for me, something like a clear call to action, but with impact as well. So I think the value of healthcare communications is probably underrated in terms of what it's done or what it can do to save lives. You just look at what happened in the past 2-3 years with the COVID pandemic, and how healthcare comms encourage people to come forward to get vaccinated and get into care. So it was simple. Get yourself into a centre, get vaccinated and protect yourself and protect others. So these are kind of clear messages that you are getting around it. So for me, simplicity, easy to understand, impact with a good call to action.
Perfect. Thank you, Stephen. It's good to hear an example there. Tina, do you have any kind of front of mind examples that when you think of good healthcare communications spring to mind?
Yeah, I mean, I would say this because it's an Astellas project in particular, but I was very proud and we won 2 communique awards for Action on Fistula. And that was because I believe it was impactful. We were able to measure the impact that it had on the lives of the women that it changed, women and girls, I should say, you know, in terms of the delivery within the network, the hospital network that it revolutionized, if you like, under the guidance of the Fistula Foundation, the training that was put in place for surgeons. And it was really quite unique, I think, as a program. So much so that it is still very memorable in a lot of people's minds, especially when they associate it with Astellas and what we were able to achieve in the space of time that the program was up and running. It was a partnership that ran over 6 years. But because it was designed to be memorable and to have longevity, it's still going today with the support of the Fistula Foundation, and it's reaching into other areas now and being replicated, you know, in terms of what it set out to achieve, the goals and the network that it put in place as well for training surgeons and for reaching vulnerable women and girls within the community. So for me, I think that ticked everything. In my boxes, really. So and I'm even more delighted the fact that I could have been a part, although albeit a small part, of that campaign and bringing it to the minds of so many different audiences and stakeholders around the world. Yeah,
fantastic example, thank you. And I think that is a really important point you make around the legacy and the longevity of efforts. And you know, it's quite easy to demonstrate a kind of small spike or a dent in behaviours or attitudes. The challenge is sustaining that, isn't it, over the long term? Exactly. So kind of thinking of ways you can do that, when you're not even a part of the kind of campaign anymore is a really, wonderful legacy. So yeah, fantastic example. Thank you. I also wanted to ask about communications agency partners. I'm sure you both will on a regular basis work with agencies. What do you need from your agency partners to make the most of today's opportunities and to respond to the challenges that you may face as well?
I guess for me, the one thing I love, which lots of agencies do naturally, is creativity. So being creative around what we're doing and how we can deliver the message. Again, it goes back to Tina's point, is you need to understand your audience and how they access healthcare information or where they access information or the platforms they use. So being creative around how we do that is always great. Looking for new ideas, new inspirations, whilst the creativity is still there, again, for me, it's still a bit saying, actually, how can you take simple messages but deliver them in a creative way? So those are the kind of things that I like from the agency, but also the fact that they challenge the kind of industry norms around how we do things, why we do it. And again, I just think we're getting better and better and better at looking at using different platforms to communicate, using different tools to communicate. And again, where we are now will be totally different to where we are in 5 years' time, because technology will help drive some of those innovations. I suppose for me, it's probably an agency that are kind of grounded in knowing comms and good healthcare comms, but also have the knowledge and the desire to want to be creative and use new tools to reach new audiences. A big ask, I guess, but
I would only add to that very briefly. I think Stephen's summarised it extremely well. It's just that trust as well, that trust and mutual respect and understanding between an agency partner and the client, I think can go a long way in terms of building a long-lasting partnership. And also an agency that's willing to go, above and beyond what's the minimal requirement, if you like, and to show that eagerness and enthusiasm is always, I think, very, very valuable, particularly to clients that are under time pressure, budget pressures and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. So I just think working very smartly together is a real bonus for me in terms of that partnership that can develop and grow and flourish over time.
Perfect, thank you. And as we look towards the future, and we've talked about some of the areas where we're going to need to really focus down on, what do we need to work harder on as healthcare communicators? We've done the nice bit. What let's challenge ourselves. What do we need to do better?
If I had a question, if I had an ask, really, I'd say it's about cutting through a lot of the noise. It's a busy space sometimes with healthcare comms, in particular when you're trying to land messages that are sometimes competing, because you tend to think about your client rather than the audience sometimes, because you're measured by what your client sees and how you deliver on their particular briefs. But I think also working smartly and just delivering messages that are more tailored toward the audience as well, and really bringing their understanding and their knowledge and their engagement, to the fore will also be just as valuable, I think, going forward as the individual cut through messaging that we develop and land as individual companies. So I think it's really about thinking about that landscape overall and looking at it very much from the patient's perspective and being mindful that there are a lot of competing messages that can be quite confusing. So it's about being smarter and about making sure that you do have that clarity of voice, but also that means to an end in terms of really as it goes back to my previous point, encouraging behavioural changes. So and I think everyone then is a winner, the patient, the client, and the agency partnership.
I guess for me, I think things like digital communications absolutely are going to be at the fore, and I think having a deeper understanding, I just alluded to it in my previous response, and here I'm probably going to contradict myself as well. So one of the things that we pick up from the advisory boards that we're doing in different disease areas is that patients want information that's simple. The language we use must be easy to understand. It's not complex. They don't need to kind of navigate the web to find it. And quite often we're told, don't forget about things like paper copies of things. Now, here I am sitting doing this session with my colleague in ESG looking at sustainability. And we've got that juxtapose where patients are wanting information, but they want it in the simplest form, but they still like a paper copy. They still like to read something because they're of an age where that might help them, or they're of an age where that matters to them, rather than being more digitally advanced and digitally savvy. And so I think over the next few years, we're going to have to come to a point where, I don't know, maybe we have to wrestle with our conscience and understand that there's place for both, because digital is not going away. Digital is, we're in a kind of digital transformation, or in a digital transformation era. There will always be a place for it. But how do we make sure that we leave no one behind? How do we make sure that there's not an information gap for those people that can't access it? So that's a challenge for healthcare comms as well, I think, because as well as trying to do what you're doing and be environmentally friendly and think about good governance and what you're doing around that area, actually, how do you actually meet the needs for the people that are saying to you, don't forget us, don't leave us behind, we want information, but we want it in this format. So I'm sure there's a way in which companies are doing it already. Maybe there's a way in which you use recycled papers and things. I don't know. I don't have the answers to it. And that's where, again, the healthcare comms and the healthcare agencies of the future will help us navigate that. But again, if we say we're listening to the patients and we're listening to their views and thoughts, and yet we go away and do everything totally digital, then actually we're not looking and understanding what matters to them. And at the end of the day, for me, patients are why ultimately we do what we do. So we need to make sure we're aware of that.
Yeah, it's a really important debate, actually. And one that I was having recently with a group of people. And actually, you know, there is a really growing awareness of the environmental impact of digital communications now as well. And, you know, I think there's often an assumption that actually, you know, the traditional printed copies, you know, are the main culprits. But the more and more we use digital, the more and more we need to be aware that actually there's a huge impact environmentally on those channels as well. So, you know, I think the considerations stay the same across the board, but it's a really interesting one that we can't get too ahead of ourselves. And like you say, it's, you know, you've got to meet your audiences where they are, wherever they are, but be mindful of the growing trends. Fascinating. Thank you. We talked about that a little bit. Is there anything else in terms of the skill mix of communicators that you envisage shifting or needing to shift as we look forward?
Again, maybe for me, I think things like agility. I'll go back to my opening conversation around real-world evidence, starting to use that and get that big data and analyse it quickly and then get communications around it. So agility will be good. I think having that ability to be able to kind of not anticipate what's coming, but take what's coming, analyse it quickly, and then communicate it and kind of real time to make sure that that information is getting out to the people that need to get it so they can make an informed decision about their care, whether that's around choosing a path of care versus another. Actually, for them, that information at that point in time where it's available, we should try and look at how we can get that out to patients and caregivers that might again be relying on that to make those informed decisions.
Really interesting keyword there. And agile is not always the word that is associated with the pharmaceutical industry overall. And it's a challenge, I guess, across multiple functions. But like you say, really, really critical to solve. Tina, anything to add there?
Yeah, no, I'd only add to that. as well as the agility piece, which is extremely important. I think also an awareness of, you know, the current affairs agenda, and what are the key constraints, what are the key challenges, what are the key asks that we're required to meet today. So it's all very well being embedded in a particular strategy or focus that you've been required to deliver on, but you need to be able to tailor that to what matters to people today as well, and what will matter tomorrow. So I think just on that agility spectrum, you also need to have that awareness and that responsivity that's quite quick, really. You need to be able to think on the spot and on your feet all the time, and have an awareness of what's going on around you, particularly for healthcare, because that's something that touches everybody's life in such a visible and such a long-lasting way. So there's almost no room to go wrong, really, because it matters so much to people. So in a way, we're fortunate that we do work in an industry that does touch everybody's life. You know, our clients are everyone in the world. So because everybody has to be concerned with their health, the health of their loved ones, the health of those in their communities, and the health of everyone around the world. So for people, planet, and prosperity. So, yeah, I know that would be my sustainable request, really, to make sure that people understand that it does come down to, well, simply sustainability, and making sure that we do understand that that is the world, the macrocosm and microcosms that we live in. Yeah,
absolutely. I've got one on the clock, so I'll sneak in one final question. And actually, it's kind of builds on the theme that we've been exploring, which is, you know, almost for encouraging the industry to look out rather than in, and whether that's with, you know, direct customers or just the world around them. What can we learn from other sectors in that vein in terms of communications? Is there anything that we can take and build on?
I always look at consumer brands, because in healthcare, we're so constrained and we're so afraid by codes and regulations and everything else. And I think if we look at the simplicity almost of consumer brands that start with the idea in mind and how to land it and what appeals to people, because they're very much driven by the now, what's happening now, and you know, tailoring communications on that agenda. I think healthcare could learn an awful lot from that, about not being shy. So rather than asking why, almost ask why not, you know, why can't we deliver that message? Maybe not in exactly the same way, because we need to be mindful of the importance of regulations and compliance in particular that's built into our communications, but also trying to explore those boundaries in how can we be compliant, but novel and creative and engaging at the same time. I think that's how I would look at it going forward.
Mm. Wonderful. Stephen, the last word goes to you.
Yeah, I mean, interesting. Again, I mentioned yesterday I was at a conference. It was for healthcare communicators. It's communications and reputation. And there was an agency that presented around, I think it's something like look beyond your bubble, and saying actually exactly what you're saying. Look at other sectors, try and understand what they're doing, and look at how they're doing. And I'll go back to that point about being agile and being quick to respond to things. And there's a certain mobile phone company, mobile phone provider, sorry, who have put out some adverts around the fact that the cost of living crisis is going to impact everybody, but they're not going to increase their prices. They're going to keep them flat until end of 23. And thinking, actually, do you know what? We're in the midst of all this now. You're coming up with something quick and snappy that will impact have resonance with people and customers and potential customers. So for me, it's about thinking quickly. It's about thinking, using that agility to deliver something that's going to target and bring benefit. And it goes back to what we said at the beginning. It's got to have impact and a call to action and be meaningful. Then that's some of these things that would do it. So for me, it's still that agility piece, and it's still about saying, actually, look at the here and now, take what you've got and communicate around it, but do it in a way which is going to target and reach your audiences.
Brilliant. Thank you. What a fabulous conversation. I'm feeling very inspired. The passion and expertise for your respective roles really, really shines through. And I know that so much of what you said is going to be really relevant to our communicator audience. you know, as I said at the start, how the industry continues to engage both with patients, who really encouraging to hear from you, Stephen, you know, finally starting to be recognised as a stakeholder in their own right and not just passive recipients of healthcare, and with the environmental and sustainability agenda to Tina, you know, business critical topics more than ever before. So it's been really brilliant to explore, you know, explore your views and experience on what more we as communicators can do to fuel that growth and progression. So with that in mind, Christina and Stephen, I thank you for your time and wish you a wonderful day.
Thank you, Jo.
Thank you, Jo. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.